Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. This is Michael Colligan, your host. I'm with Greg Eric as well today. He's also the host. And we're joined, Greg, by Buddy Stefanoff. So he was over on the Restoring Darkness podcast. The producer will tell me what episode it is in a second here, but we talked a lot about darkness restoration, night preservation, and the technical side of that, the actual part of doing that with fixtures. So Buddy is an entrepreneur, a small business owner, and the vice president of engineering for Crossroads LED. With over 20 years of experience and expertise in the development of advanced LED-based luminaires and dark sky certified lighting platforms, Mr. Stefanoff is the driving force behind the company's product line, which has received numerous patents and awards, including recognition by Dark Sky, well, it used to be called the International Dark Sky, now it's called Dark Sky, prestigious Best Design and Technical Innovation Award. Under Mr. Stefanoff's leadership and direction, Crossroads LED has become the undisputed worldwide leader in the design and production of luminaires that reduce light pollution and sky glow. Before we get to Buddy Stefanoff, Greg Eric, we're going to slide over
Sure.
to ETISSL.com.
Slide over now and slide over often because they have a little bit of everything. We've talked about specific products at time and some unique things that they offer that you can find, including their spin lights and their night light product that actually has a nice little glow around certain fixtures and recessed cans, something very unique. But they also have industrial fixtures, outdoor fixtures, emergency lights, exits, and every type of indoor, commercial, and residential fixture you can think of. So ETI is a complete line. Check those guys out.
You know what
Really an
else I
offer.
saw? I went to ETI at ETISSL.com before the show started, and I noticed a nice line of disinfection products as well. And you know
Do.
what? We talked a lot in 2020 about UV disinfection, but it's really just starting to now enter into the as ready to go products. We know what to do now. 4 years later, only 4 years later, but we always believed it here on the show. We thought, of all the things that people were doing for the pandemic at the time, this UV disinfection piece really looks like something that might actually work.
That's right.
So I saw that on their website there, ETISSL.com. That train is chugging along and it's coming. You're going to need a partner with that soon. So check them out for that. And of course, the National Association, Greg, of Innovative Lighting Distributors. You got a warehouse? It's got light bulbs in it. Light fixtures, lighting in the warehouse. You sell it to people, and you can be a member of NAILD. You don't have a warehouse, can't be a member. You can join one of our councils, maybe, but you can't be a member. So if you have a warehouse with light bulbs in it, you're either a vendor or a member of NAILD. You're guaranteed one or the other. So go to NAILD.org, check it out. Buddy Stefanoff, welcome back into Get a Grip Studios and on to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
It's good to be here.
So I think what, it's interesting that we talked about that because we had you on the Restoring Darkness. It was, us, and we got a little different audience potentially with Get a Grip on Lighting. So trying to spin it a little different but not repeat a lot of what we said is always tough. But
Sure.
I mean, tell us why should the industry care about darkness in your opinion, or restoring darkness, or
Oh
what term
God,
can
we're
I use,
still
Mike?
there. Like, that's why I hate Get a Grip. Like, ah, oh, we're still at that point, eh, buddy? Okay, explain it to everybody,
Yeah,
buddy.
because let me tell you first before, buddy, is we as part of Nailed, we're very passionate about trying to get some movement going. And
Right.
as you know, Michael, overly passionate. I'm in there. But maybe overly is not the right word, but other distributors we talk to are just like, I don't care. And then that's kind of where they're at. And we hear it
And you
often, and
expressed
we're
that as
figuring it
well
out.
to us, buddy, on the last show, that there's a lot of
Yeah,
apathy out
right.
there.
Yeah, I think part of the issue is the industry is a little slow to respond to customer needs. I'm in Flagstaff, Arizona today, and I'll be in Arizona and Utah for the next 2 weeks. We've had a tremendous, a positive response to our products that are geared toward dark sky lighting. I think part of the reason the other manufacturers and some distributors are not on board is because they don't understand the issue. And quite frankly, they don't have the technology to provide the products. A lot of them try to offer 3000 or 2700 Kelvin LEDs, claiming that they're dark sky compliant when in fact they're not. the IDA recently dropped the standards to 2200 Kelvin. And we're in discussions with them right now to lower that even further. Because even at those levels, there is a significant amount of short wavelength blue light that emanates from those fixtures and causes light pollution in the sky globe. So I think those are the driving metrics right now.
Let me just jump in here, Greg, because, you know, I'm just so hot about this and I'm talking to Buddy, and Buddy's right on the front line, the bleeding edge of this. And, you know, what I would say, and I want to see if you agree with me before we move forward, Buddy, is that IDA or Dark Sky, whatever they're called now, IDA, Dark Sky, International, whatever it is, okay? And the lighting industry, they've gone from 3,000K when they put out the five principles of responsible outdoor lighting. And now we're starting to tip into the teens, Buddy. 1900 Kelvin, yes. People are talking about 1800 Kelvin. And I think Kelvin might even be the wrong word. You know what I'm saying? We don't even use the right words. I would say that the lighting industry combined with the darkness people, the dark sky people, haven't really decided really what we're supposed to do here yet. And there you are, you're at the bleeding edge, you got fixtures, you got this stuff, you're winning awards, you're getting patents and all this kind of thing. But really, I don't think the industry has decided that we have a moral responsibility in this field. We need to be able to provide customers with this kind of lighting, and we need to start right now. But there you are at the bleeding edge, but the lighting industry is following you or behind you. Is that correct?
That is correct. A couple of interesting issues have come up since we last spoke. One of which was the city of Sedona, Arizona, released a request for bid for dark sky lighting products for their decorative fixtures. This is to replace all the city-owned fixtures. They put out a specification, released a bid, and none of the local distributors bid on it. We were the only ones that bid on it. And I've gone back and talked with some of the people who provide lighting in Arizona, and they didn't understand the specification. They didn't understand what the city of Sedona needed. It's a very simple specification. It just calls out exactly what color temperatures, the type of light, the fixtures they were looking for, but nobody responded.
What did it say? Like, and what was the Kelvin temp? What was the fixture? Give us a...
It was 2,700 Kelvin. They need it for their residential areas.
What else did it say?
You know, it wasn't anything like Flagstaff. The Flagstaff specification is probably one of the most strict lighting specifications on the planet. It has no color temperature. It requires instead a scotopic-photopic ratio that very few distributors in the industry even know what that is. The narrowband amber is even more strict and requires peak and dominant wavelengths measured in nanometers.
So you're talking about the Flagstaff. You're talking about the Flagstaff spec versus the Sedona spec here. The Flagstaff spec was deep into the areas that really matter, and the Sedona spec was only in Kelvin temperature, which really doesn't do much. Doesn't really tell us that much about the light source, but that no one in the area, the local area, could support or provide the equipment to the or understand the specification to the Sedona people of the city of Sedona, which is probably $1 million worth of business or something like that, right? It's probably $1 million deal.
It was a very significant project.
Like Sedona is a city of 100,000 people or something. It's a big city.
Oh no, Sedona, I believe, is a city of about 10,000 to 12,000 people. I'll have to go back and check. But they have a huge tourism base.
Sure.
It's like Santa Fe, New Mexico. More people visit Sedona than live there every year. You know, so they make a huge amount on tourism.
I wonder if there's like a metric, like an average out there of municipal lighting to population metric. Is it two lights to one person that lives in a town? Or, you know, like on average, I'd like to know that just to get a feel for this kind of thing. But yeah, you're looking at a nice job. I mean, it's going to be a $300,000 order or $1 million order or something like that for a municipality, Greg. And the distributors couldn't respond. That's a tragedy, man. They don't like money or something. Maybe we got to become better knowledge workers.
Well, that and I guess
we...
Go ahead, buddy.
No, go ahead. I interrupted.
No, I wanted to know more about what it was. So you said it was 27K, and what scared people away? What else was there to it?
I'm not sure that there was anything more to it than that. Like I said, it wasn't very technical. They didn't want to use the screw-in corn cobs. They had tried that and they had failed horribly in the field. So they were disqualified. They disqualified that particular product line, and they wanted conversion kits. We even went the extra step of providing our contact information to the distributors, and we still didn't get any responses. So, there is there's a disconnect there, and I don't think it's the distributors not wanting to get involved. It's just that they simply don't understand the lighting situation when it comes to dark sky lighting.
The industry is
The
not there
project
yet,
go?
Greg. The industry is not there. Yeah, I was going to say, did you get the project? Did you get the did you win the bid?
Oh yes, we got it.
Yeah.
I'll be visiting with them tomorrow.
Is it so it's not done yet?
Well, we just got the contract, so we'll have it done by June.
So, but without sharing all your info, but is it so you did a retrofit kit that was 27K, and what else was unique about it that made it so it met the requirements they were asking for?
It hit 2700 Kelvin. It had to have low glare and be dark sky compliant. It's the fixture that's over my shoulder. It's nothing hot, very technical. It's just a well assembled, well manufactured product.
And how do they measure low glare?
They measure it based on the IES reports on the using the bug rating.
So that's what's, and so that's in Sedona, that we said, right? And then Flagstaff
Yes.
is a lot more strict with it, and they didn't give you a, you can do any Kelvin temperature you want, but you have to meet certain scotopic, photopic.
Right. And to meet the scotopic-photopic ratio that the city of Flagstaff is looking for, you do have to lower the Kelvin temperature. It's physically impossible to do it with a Kelvin temperature of about 1800-1900 and above. It's physically impossible. It can't be done.
So I think what's hard for me as a distributor, understanding is that at the beginning, the Kelvin needs to be dark sky compliant needs to be, or is maybe changing to 1900 or less, right? Is that what you said? And what is it at now?
Yes.
Is the Kelvin requirement now?
To meet the standard for the city of Flagstaff, we had to bring the Kelvin temperature down to 1650.
But you're
We
not really
actually had to
using
design.
Kelvin temperature. You're using another metric, and the Kelvin temperature correlates to that metric. Is that correct? Way to put it.
Exactly. That's
Yeah.
exactly what it was. To meet the scotopic-photopic ratio and a few other metrics, we had to bring the Kelvin temperature to 1650 Kelvin. We actually had to
No,
work with our
what can
LED
I mean, let me
supply.
just ask you. What you're doing is you're making the scotopic-photopic metrics correspond to this Kelvin temperature. It's not the other way around,
That
right?
is correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, that is correct.
So back to the question of the Kelvin temp then, what is IDA standard or requirement for Kelvin temp? It needs to be under what currently?
Today, the standard is 2200 Kelvin or lower.
So, but you just said you
That
got
is the
Sedona
standard
at
from dark sky.
27K. That was dark sky. How does that work?
That is because the state of Arizona hasn't adopted the 2200 Kelvin requirement yet. And so the state, because there's a state highway that runs through the city, they mandated the Kelvin temperature at 2700. Everything
Is it?
else had to be dark sky rated. We had to lower the glare. We had to reduce lumen output so we didn't get a lot of uplight.
So this
But
to me
again,
is exactly,
very simple
yeah.
I mean, no, Greg, you're not ready to do this yet because it's not in a little
Yeah.
package box for you yet, bud.
No, but I'm
That you
saying
could
that's
just pull the
exactly the
box off the cat.
problem.
No,
And
but
this is
what
get a
I'm
grip on
saying
lighting,
is,
Mike, for
yeah,
distributor. I'm
I'm
telling you
with
why
you.
distributors don't
I'm
do it.
100%. There's a
Because it's
reason.
confusing. What
Distributors
is
are
it?
not engineers. Distributors are not engineers. They
But
need
you
to know
just
that
said
the
it's
product's
got to
going
be
to
under
work.
22, and but in Arizona it can be 27.
No,
Well, who
no, no,
knows
no.
that?
No. What's happening right now is nobody knows what's going on. Okay?
Exactly.
In the IES, in the dark sky, like the dark sky has gone from, we need it to be 3,000 from the five principles of responsible outdoor lighting. IES and dark sky together, those two, okay? The top dogs of the world of lighting and darkness, there's your top dogs, right? I don't know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Greg, when did they come out with the five principles?
Yeah,
right? That's not that's not 15 years ago. So they went from 3,000 to 27 to 2,200. Now we're on our way down to 1,900, 1,650 here with Buddy. We're doing a lot of talking here, Buddy, and we're going to bring you back into this show in a second.
It's fine. I'm enjoying the conversation.
But the reality is, Buddy, none of these people know what the hell's going on. Or they're on their way to figuring out. How is that a nicer way to put it? That we don't know. You're at the front end of the industry making products based on the information that's coming out and your own engineering and your own design, right? But you're making the products, but nobody's telling you. The IES and the IDA have not decided what the actual standard is going to be yet, and we're still on our way there. That would be my summary. Buddy, would you agree with that?
I believe that whole in part is accurate. A big part of our working with cities and municipalities is providing educational resources. That's one of the reasons I'm out here for the next 2 weeks. We meet with the city engineers, we meet with the state planners, we meet with county commissioners, and we explain to them the issues of dark sky lighting. And you know, it's not something that's made up. It's not something that is used as a sale or marketing tool. It's a very real issue. And a big part of what we do out here is educate the decision makers into why they need to use dark sky lighting.
And how about we educate what dark sky lighting is?
Yeah, hang on, Greg. Yes, and I'm going to jump in here, Buddy, and I'm going to say something. You might not like what I'm about to say, but I think you're going to understand why I'm saying it. It's not really appropriate for a manufacturer to be educating end users. I don't think that's the way it should happen. We have the Illuminating Engineering Society. We have the all these standards bodies. We have Dark Sky, International Dark Sky, IDA or whatever. You know, their name is Dark Sky now. We have these people. They should be setting a standard. The problem is that those groups of people have not thought deeply about this idea since the early 2000s. The LED boom wiped them off the map. Everybody stopped caring about darkness restoration and night preservation. And it was just 5,000 Kelvin everywhere you go. Boom. Put them up there. Let's go.
Exactly.
Right? And it just blew. I remember CFL fixtures, cutoff CFL fixtures coming out with 3,000 Kelvin CFL lamps in them in like 2007 and 8 with IDA stickers on the side of the boxes. I remember that. And LEDs just steamrolled all that stuff. And these people are scrambling now in the fourth quarter to come up with a standard. And it's, you know, it's going to keep going down. We need to figure this out in the age of LED. It's not figured out yet. You're making fixtures. People want solutions. Greg, distributors can sell this kind of thing. It's not going to be perfect yet. We need another 5 years, but we can't wait. We have to develop and deploy and develop and deploy and develop and deploy, like what Buddy's doing right now. He's on the bleeding edge, Greg. We need to develop and deploy so that we find the solution, the mistakes happen, and people get better and better and better at this. That's the only way to go. And Buddy's on the front lines of it. I love you, Buddy. I wish I was with you on the front lines. I'm back here, Buddy, but I can't. Hey, I can't get there. I'm a distributor. It's hard.
I'll be here all week.
Yeah.
I'll be in Flagstaff all week. Hop on a plane.
The distributors can't do it because we're not engineers. That's the issue you're facing. You know, we're not specifiers.
And to answer your question earlier, I 100% agree with you. Manufacturers should not be out educating decision makers. Manufacturers should be manufacturing the product based on the needs of their clients. I agree with you. The issue is nobody else is coming out here and telling the decision makers 3,000 Kelvin isn't working. 2,700 Kelvin isn't working. 2,200, while an improvement, still isn't solving the problem. Nobody's out here telling the decision makers this, so they have nothing to go on. The distributors will show up and say, hey, I have a 2,700 Kelvin LED roadway light, and it's IDA certified. Well, it was IDA certified in 2016 or 2017. You know, it doesn't meet the current standards, but they don't tell them that because they're more interested in the sale than to try to solve the problem.
Yeah, that's what distributors
because
do.
Of this,
They sell shit. I know, and they have it in their warehouses.
And I'm not faulting them for it. Yes. I'm the lead engineer for the company, but I'm spending the next 2 weeks playing salesman. Yeah. I understand it. I get it. But at some point, somebody has to stand up and take a stand and say, you know, enough is enough. If we don't stop putting up these warm Kelvin LEDs or these 4,000 or 5,000 Kelvin LEDs, we're going to reach a breaking point where it's going to take 10, 15, 20 years to solve the problem.
Because all the eye fixtures will be burned out. They're going to have to change them again. They're going to have to change it because a lot of the fixtures are going to burn out for sure.
And a lot of them are failing prematurely. I'll send you all the video after this, after our conversation today. You know, we're all very familiar with the term, the great purpling of America. You know, all the fixtures that are changing colors, that are color shifting due to issues with the phosphorus on the LEDs. Mm-hmm. What we've run into in about the last 9 to 10 months is a phenomenon that we're calling the great strobing of America. Mm-hmm. We've run into number of fixtures that are starting to strobe and flash, and they've only been in service for maybe a year, 18 months. I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, late last week, and I was leaving a meeting. It was in the evening. I drove home. There was an entire block at the state capitol that was just randomly strobing. It was very disorienting. I personally witnessed a Jeep almost clip a pedestrian trying to cross a sidewalk. I could see the person driving the Jeep, and he was staring at the lights while he was driving down the road. He was looking out the side view mirror or the side view window.
Have you seen the video where the guy's driving down the strobing with the techno beats going in the background and the streetlights are strobing? Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't, but that would be hilarious.
Oh, I wish I could find that video where the guy's driving his car and it's like he's got the boots, boo, boo, boop, and all the streetlights are strobing as he's driving under them. Yeah, you're legit.
This one's pretty crazy. It looks like an offbeat light show, or you know, if it was higher up in the sky, it looks like lightning. It's really, really pronounced.
Yeah, it is.
But we're seeing that more and more, and that's an issue with quality. A lot of cities still are just solely focused on looking for the lowest bidder. Whether it meets the specification or not is irrelevant. There was an issue last year with the state of Arizona where they were planning on purchasing a luminaire that didn't even meet their own standards. It wasn't even close. It didn't even have the efficacy, the lumen output. It didn't even have the right distribution, but it was cheap. And it took a few people to stand up and go, you know, you hold us to a higher standard. You know, now you need to look yourselves in the mirror and go, why are you actually doing this? Hmm. And they actually eventually relented and changed their mind. But we advocate cities and all purchasers use a performance-based contract. Very simple document. It requires a few basic test reports that any lighting manufacturer should have access to and should have done. And the ones that can't provide it are the ones that are probably getting their products overseas or is manufactured to such a poor quality that they know it won't pass a test.
You know what the problem though is? I've never met the LED manufacturer that says we make the crappy LEDs. I've never seen that guy, Greg. Have you ever seen that guy? Everybody always has this kind of standoffish. What do you mean? We make the quality. Everyone has that attitude. I've never met a company, Greg, that just says, you know what? It would almost be preferable. You know that? If somebody came into my office and said, look, man, I'm just going to give you the lowest price on everything. Like, don't worry about it. I'd prefer it, buddy, if there was someone out there that just said, yeah, we got El Cheapo lighting manufacturer and everything's DLC approved. Don't worry about it. It's all on the DLC list, but it's made as cheap as we can make it.
Going there.
No, but it's made as cheap as possible. I would prefer that to this, like, we have the quality. Everybody has the quality stuff. Nobody says that their stuff is not of the highest quality. So how do you distinguish? How does the end user distinguish?
Well, like I said, asking or demanding basic test reports, LM79s, ISTM test reports, in situ thermal testing.
See, we got buddies playing salesman when he's the engineer. You see, he doesn't understand.
I know. See that this is what happens.
Yeah.
But you can very quickly determine which products work when they have a low efficacy rating. You know, if the performance based specification requires, you know, 140, 160 lumens per watt, and the fixture they're trying to offer won't even hit 100. There's probably a problem there. It's probably got thermal issues. That's why it's performing so poorly. Mm. You know, if it's performance based, it solves a lot of problems. There's a customer in Gilbert, Arizona, that contacted us. They have an RGB, a programmable RGB problem for a large facility. It has thousands of RGB lights. It went to the lowest bidder. There was absolutely no specification other than the contractor said, yeah, we can do that. We're great at it. 9 months into the project and it still isn't working. Mm. And the owner of this facility called me yesterday. He's ready to tear it out and start over. He is done with this company.
Sometimes you got to tear stuff out.
And I said, well, you know, if you'd had a performance-based specification and held the contractor or the manufacturer or whoever's providing the products to a standard, a lot of the problems you're facing today probably would not have happened.
Well, I mean, that's the key, buddy. Let me give you an anecdote. Okay, in my career, I have done maybe two dozen. So you're talking 25 years of selling lighting on energy efficiency basis with rebates. I have done maybe 24 shared savings deals, is what I call them. And that's where I mm-hmm. prove to the client the energy efficiency they save after installation on a quarterly basis. And we split the electricity savings by some percentage, okay? Whether it's 50-50, mm-hmm. 80-20, whatever, depending on the length of the deal. I've done this like 24 times, okay? The only people that ever check the energy savings – Greg, have you ever had a customer check the energy savings in your 20-year career in lighting?
Not accurately. I mean,
no. So
analyzing a bill. Yeah.
You've been selling lighting for 20 years on energy efficiency basis, right? And you have never had a customer verify the energy savings formally with you.
No.
See? There you go, buddy. Nobody verifies. Right. You want to know something? Get a grip on lighting listeners out there. You want to be a winner in life? Be a verifier. Verifiers win, actually, in life. Because they're the ones that go back and say right away before the lights are purple, hey, these are not performing properly according to the specification. How do you know? Because we tested them. And they're too hot or they're not the color temperature is not right or whatever. And you're much more likely to get your warranty service closer to the sale than you are further from the sale, buddy.
Mm-hmm. You know, I agree with that 100%. You know, when we do an installation, we always do a before and after light survey. We do a baseline survey and we'll measure for outdoor lighting. We'll measure foot candles on the ground distribution. We'll measure the spectrum of the light, the color temperature of the light. And then we'll do an installation afterwards. And we actually have invested in the equipment such as this device right here that you can actually see it. I'm going to turn it down so you can see the screen. But yeah, I'm going to sit here and measure the light output of this LED light that's illuminating my desk. We'll do that before and after to show the client that our product is meeting that performance-based specification. We'll go out and take the energy readings and we'll do before and after to prove to them that it's working. But I do agree with you. There's very little verification done. Almost every city we have worked with that has done either installation that required an energy savings that they would get a rebate check or a monthly check every month from a utility company or an ESCO. Not one of those cities really ever will release those numbers. And I think part of the reason is why that's why the numbers that they were promised actually fall short. There is a city in New Mexico that was supposed to be saving $15,000 a month. And there have been dozens of people that have requested the financial audit for that installation to show that it's been done. And the Public Works Department has absolutely refused to release them.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, everybody knows it's not delivering what the manufacturer claimed the energy savings would be.
It's not even the manufacturer, though, buddy. It's not the manufacturer. It's the entire process we go about in procurement with our cities and associations mm-hmm. and things like this. The entire process of doing this is flawed. So much work is put into the pre-sale decision.
Yes.
Right? Who are we going to buy from and why? And then people get wined and dined. And next thing you know, they're out with Greg and Michael at a beautiful dinner and they just can't stop saying yes to us. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what happens. I'm not kidding you. And then next thing you know, they're into the, you know, bad lighting system and there's no effort put into the verification afterwards. Are the lights on? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're on. Okay, good. Let's go. Next thing off the list. Right? And so this the post, if you want to be rich in life, you want to be successful in life, you want a simple thing to do, verify things. Verify mm-hmm. and hold people accountable and you'll become a leader at anything you do. Because nobody does
and that's what we do.
It's so valuable.
Okay.
So and that's what our company does.
Yeah, Mike, if you can
Greg talking, we have dominated.
Greg, go ahead.
Yes. I get 30 seconds. Thank you.
Yeah, go. I'll turn off my mic.
So back to the exterior, even the verification, you know, like it all relates. So everybody needs light. We know that, right? Some want what's right. Some say, I want the right lighting, whatever the right lighting is. But no one knows what's right. And that's the problem. And until we know what's right, I think we're going to just keep giving them light. And that's where all distributors are at, is that nobody's ever going to define what's right. I get that we're working towards it, but you're talking to Arizona's the same state. Flagstaff and Sedona aren't that far apart. They both ask for dark sky and they both ask for something different. So how the hell exactly. are we ever going to do this until that happens? There, I said my piece, Mike. How?
Well, distributors are, we can't. Distributors, right. Listen, what we have to do is the Lighting and Darkness Foundation has to complete the training program that we're working on. We're going to put it out there. We're going to educate the frontliners, is what we call them, distributors, contractors, agents, and representatives. And then we're going to start the conversation. And the main thing, buddy, that I think has to change more than anything else, and you tell me if this is wrong, we got to get the cool kids doing darkness restoration and night preservation. It's got to start as like a status symbol. It's the only way.
I don't know about that. When you define cool people, I don't know if you're talking about, you know, you movie buddy. Stars or cities with good tourism policies.
No, the distributors that are doing it have to have a disgust reaction towards the ones that aren't at the Nailed convention. Basically,
right. Well, that's what'll happen. That part's true. I think one thing that probably hasn't been brought up is that distributors need to understand that no two cities will ever have the exact same lighting requirements. Flagstaff has a very strict lighting policy because they have two observatories within their city limits, the Naval Observatory and the Lowell Observatory. The light levels there have to be very, very low for those facilities to operate, or they'll have to leave, and the city doesn't want them to leave. So they've taken this draconian measure to reduce light pollution. Sedona is a tourism town. You know, they need to make sure that they have enough lighting to protect the tourists and the residents, but at the same time, they want to limit light pollution and sky glow.
But nobody knows, you know, what that Phoenix right amount of lighting is, buddy.
Right. And each city, like I said, each city will have a different need. You know, back in what, 2018, 20, I think it was 2018, the city of Phoenix was one of the first cities in the nation to require 2700 Kelvin because they were responding then to what the IDA said was going to be the future requirement. You know, before that, it was 3000 Kelvin. You know, they're not difficult metrics to reach, but distributors and lighting manufacturers need to be flexible and have the ability to meet the needs of the client. And that's what we do.
So, you know, listen, I mean, I'm apologizing to all the wonderful Get a Grip on Lighting listeners. I'm a bit hot on this issue. As you can see, I interrupted Greg and Buddy. You know, I'm super, wasn't playing host. I'm passionate about this issue. But let me tell you, all the cool kids are going with dark skies, guys. Like just, I'm going to put out a public service announcement to everybody in the lighting industry. This is the future of the industry, and there's money to be made, and we got to go make the money, Greg. That's what we have to learn. We have to adapt, just like we've done in the past. And Buddy Stefanoff's on the front lines with Crossroads LED. Greg, ETISSL.com, brother.
That's right. We talked about it at the beginning, full complete line manufacturer, actually make their product, indoor, commercial, residential fixtures, industrial, outdoor, emergency exit. They have grow lights. They even have disinfection, you mentioned. A lot of unique stuff too. So check it out.
That's right. And you want to go down to the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. If you have light fixtures or light bulbs in a warehouse, there's a place for you in Nailed. Right? That's basically the way it works, Greg. Other than there, maybe there's some people that have light bulbs in a warehouse that wouldn't be members of NAIL, but I can't think of why not. So if you got light bulbs in a warehouse, go to nald.org. And of course, Buddy Stefanoff, Crossroads LED. Thank you for joining us today on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.